Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and I'm having another conversation with my dear friend, Clay Boykin. Hey, Clay.
Hey, Dennis, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. It seems like that the music was a little loud at the beginning of that, but we'll see how it comes out on the end. I'm trying to have a little music open that gives us a little rhythm that comes in. This is the same music that we use on Reasonably Spontaneous Conversation, the video and the podcast.
Yes.
So going back to this is our third conversation on the new compassionate male. And I, as you and I have talked so much before, as we know from Viktor Frankl and so many of the other people, that our world is created from the inside out. And I have found in my life that the world will correspond very clearly to my internal expectations and to my internal world, so that if there is a lot of peace inside of me, I will experience peace even if I'm in a very contentious situation. I will still experience the peace and look for the peace.
Yep.
But if I'm in, but inside, if I'm really conflicted inside, and I go outside and I try to meet it, it doesn't matter how peaceful. I could be in the, you know, with the Dalai Lama, and I won't experience the peace. I'll find some way to find conflict in it. Do you find those same things happening?
Oh, gosh, yes. I immediately go back to some of my days in the corporate world and going into an organization and trying to bring peace into an organization that's trying as hard as it can. And people are just, you know, going crazy. And it's, for me, it was really something, because I'd walk in and it seemed like the crazier it was, the more peace I had inside, this knowing that, oh, I got this. And and just having that peace inside and that energy coming out in that way brought a calming effect into an organization. And
I witnessed it.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, and you could witness it. You finish.
Yeah, and I could witness it evolving, and it wasn't anything overt that I'd be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Other than really listening deeply to where people are coming from and saying, well, where's the pain behind this feeling that's coming out? Where, you know, where is this? Where is their fear? And somehow connecting with that. And the other person not even really necessarily knowing that that's what I'm doing, but 1,000 minor adjustments here and there, and things would change. But it all began with from a place of feeling the peace inside and being really grounded in that. You know, part of it was at first maybe a defense mechanism. You know, I'd go, oh God, I got to go inside, find myself. But once I was there, then it was flowing, and all the gnashing of teeth and all the stuff going on around, it would just begin to calm, you know. And
how did you sell that to the corporate world? So you were in the corporate world from when to when?
Oh, from 1980 to 2002, I was at Motorola. And,
all right, so
you know,
you're at Motorola,
really,
and that's what I want to know. How did you sell this? How did you grow into this role and find that this was what was yours to do?
Well, when I got out of the Marine Corps, you know, they had offered me a job in marketing, and I thought, well, let me learn the factory first. And so I kind of cut my teeth in a production area, and that was where I kind of had my first success. We grew a weekend shift from about 20 people to over 100, and I was just bringing what was my nature coming out of the Corps, you know, the servant leadership approach, if you will. And they saw what I did there, and another organization said, well, you know, come on into marketing and do your stuff here. And so it was more reputation. If if an exec said, well, come in and give me a PowerPoint presentation on what you're going to do when you're going to change this organization, I go, I can't do that. You know, you just got to trust me. This is not a linear process.
But how did they react to that? How did engineers react to, oh, no, this is not a linear process, because we understand, as we do now in 2020, the importance of emotional intelligence, which are the soft skills, those things that first get pushed off the minute the budget gets cut. Oh, no, mm-hmm. we don't, you know, how did you get the hearts and minds of these executives in order to give you a chance in the 80s, because here we are, we're talking about right at the computer, when the computer, the chips were starting, and you mm-hmm. were in that business. And it was really, they're going to look back on it when it created, you were there.
Bringing peace into an organization is contagious. And what I found is the way I would do it was one person at a time. And building trust, but I really cared about that person. I really cared about what they, where they were going in their career. Where were they aiming at? And how can I help them get there? And when I started to realize I was really being honest and that I really meant mm-hmm. that, then they began to kind of settle in and listen to me. The truth of the matter was, is, you know, I'm not an engineer. And so if they weren't successful, then I certainly wasn't going to be successful. So I, you know, it was a
sure.
good relationship. You know, I do what I can to clear the BS out from in front of them so they could come mm-hmm. through and do the job that they're there to do. And, you know, that goes back to the Marine Corps days. You know, that's what I did when I checked in at a firing battery, the gunnery sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
I went over to him first off. I'm a, you know, fresh out lieutenant. I says, look, Gunny, you know how to run this place. How can I serve you? What can I do to support you so that you can do what you need to do? And it really kind of caught him off guard.
Wow.
But we formed a really powerful relationship that way. And we did a lot of things that way. And I just brought that into Motorola with me. And that's the essence of it. Just really care about another person and help everybody aim at something bigger than what they are, you know, what their particular issue is.
Exactly.
Yes. But the bigger picture here, you know, and, gosh, I know one
well,
time
I
brought
wanna,
in,
I want to dig
go
in.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
No. You started a story. You start a story. You finish the damn thing. Get talking.
Well, we had a division picnic with this one organization, and I took photographs and candid shots. And you know, I came in one weekend. I had those photographs blown up, matted, and framed, and I took all the engineering drawings off the wall, and I put all these framed photographs around the wall in the office area. There could have been 100 of them. And they were candid pictures of people playing with their kids and, you know, candid shots, you know, really, really fun stuff. And when they came in on Monday morning, you know, they said, well, hey, where's my engineering? Oh, hey, look, there's my kid. Hey, look over here. And everybody's kind of bubbling about that. And they were really enjoying the photographs. And they looked at me and they said, well, Clay, why'd you do this? And I says, I always want you to know and remember why you come to work in the morning. And the energy in that room just changed. This, you know, yes, it's about engineering, it's about design, it's about yields, it's about all this delivery, customer service. And let's not forget, we all have children, we all have families. You know, that's what we're here to do. That's what this is all
yeah.
about. And really, you know, brought a family sense into the organization.
I want to ask you about the, because we are now, you and I are involved in, you have a circle of men that you begin, and this initiative of the New Compassionate Male that you're taking around the world. But I want to go back to that time, and what was the mindset? Was this a heavily male organization, and what was the mindset of you and the mind, the evolving mindset of you and the evolving mindset of the organization, the male-centric organization at Motorola?
Well, you're right. It was male-centric, and things were moving fast, and we were on the, you know, on the bubble. We were really, you know, leaders in the industry, and everybody was at a dead sprint. And with that came a lot of fear. And the general tendency was, you know, these fellas, and there were women there too, but they'd forgotten their social skills a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was there to kind of help ease that around. They needed somebody to come in and just, you know, wrap their arms around them collectively and just give them a big bear hug and say, "Hey, we're in this together. You know, we win together." And you know, that sounds kind of, you know, generic, you know, we win as a team and so forth, but you get down below that and it really brings out the heart in an organization.
Oh yeah.
And, yeah.
You notice that so much now. I notice it so much even more in male sports teams. Somebody will fumble right at somebody will fumble. I just saw this on a pro playoff game. A guy fumbled at the first of the game, had a great opportunity, fumbled at the very first of the game, and the love and support that the team gave him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And including with as strong as the one who scores a touchdown. And it was so much of a team. You see the embrace. You'll see I'll see the quarterback in the huddle go around to each one of the team members and acknowledge them. You know, somebody scores and they go back and acknowledge the person that did the block that got them into the end zone and go in. And it just touches me so much. That is the new compassionate male. That is getting a chance to know whether we're up or whether we're down, we're in this together. So I know sports metaphors and football metaphors, but that's me.
Well, what just popped in my mind when you started talking about football was the image of these two opponents. They run dead into each other, you know, on the battlefield, and one of them's knocked down, and the opponent puts a hand down and helps the other guy get back up.
Yeah,
that's the essence of it. You know, we're in competition. Yeah, we're beating the crap out of each other, but I honor you as another human being.
Right.
And to me, that's the essence of sportsmanship. And that's not a head thing. That's a heart thing.
Yep. Now you went through, and so you had an enormously successful career, and then you got laid off. And
yes.
I want to talk more deeply about that, because that happens to all of us. All of us get fired. All of us get endings, and when we, especially as men, when we define ourselves as that job, it can be enormously just shattering. And who am I? And so can you talk about your experience there and what – just talk about it. I want to – because it's something that all of us get a chance to go through, and I want to know your experience in this, Clay.
Well, you know, the industry would go through cycles, and there'd be times when there'd be layoffs and then hiring and layoffs. And I was pretty burned out. I'd been at it for 22 years. And we'd just gone through a layoff, and it looked like there was going to be another one coming up. But one of the things that really hit me hard was a dear friend of mine was getting laid off, and they brought security up, which isn't uncommon. You know, and they were going to walk him out. And I said, wait a second, I'll walk him out. You know, and I helped him pack his stuff out, and I walked him out. I was his friend. You know, that's what we do for each other. And then a bit after that, you know, word was in the wind that we were having another round, and I stepped up and I said, look, you know, give me a package. I don't want anything extra, but just give me a package. I'll volunteer. I'll go. And that'll save somebody else's job. And it's a win-win. And so that's actually how I went out.
How did you know you were ready? Emotionally, financially, it still took a leap of faith for you to be able to do that. What can you go back and remember that when you finally went, okay?
I was imploding. You know, I had traveled all over the world. I'd been through different organizations. I'd been out there on the front lines for so long, and I saw myself just faltering, and my emotions were up. And I found myself just not showing up as a person that I knew that I was. And and I just finally got to a place that says, I've got to change. If I don't change something now, when am I going to change it? And, I can do this myself, or I can be drug out, or carried out.
Yeah.
And,
exactly. Escorted out by security.
Yeah. Or on a stretcher, you know.
Or on a stretcher. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I probably stayed a bit longer than I should have. But there's learning in that. But
sure.
Yeah, it was emotional. But as soon as I did that, you know, walking out and the air felt fresher, and you know, it was an opportunity to, you know, plow some fresh ground to do something new.
Yep.
And
so what
that
occurred to you? So what was your? Did you already have a plan? Did you think, to go back to the day after you left, what was going through the mind of Clay Boykin?
It was, there was exhaustion. There was, I was elated that I had some runway. You know, I saved up money. I knew it. I didn't have to go immediately back into the trenches, and I could do something maybe for fun, and so that really re-energized me. I didn't have a specific, you know, here's my 5-year plan now. It just wasn't there. But the feeling of it, I need to do something new. I need to, you know, change the environment, change what I'm doing, and let it unfold from there. So call it a leap of faith, call it blind faith, whatever you want to call it. I felt good about making the move that I did. And I stumbled. You know, some things that I tried didn't work. And
like what? Give me an example.
Well, I went to, somebody invited me in to sell insurance, and I got up and running on that. It takes quite a while to build a book of business, and I was, in first gear, spinning my wheels, and real hard, and not making a lot of progress, out of it. But I was, being successful, but not at a pace that I needed to be. And so I finally said, I need to move on. And interestingly enough, I was invited to come in and run a small startup company. And so that was another, getting re-energized. And, what do they say, 90% of startups, eventually don't make it. And so I ran that company, and we had the right technology. We had the right concepts. We couldn't get enough out in the market fast enough to make a difference. And so the company ultimately failed. And I took that on the chin pretty hard. But that led me to another startup company. So I was out from the protection and the big umbrella of the big corporation, and I was kind of flying without a net, like most entrepreneurs do. And I had some hard knocks in the, along the way doing, in the process of doing that. But not once did I ever feel like, oh, gee, I wish I was back inside the corporate world.
Right. So you had a beginner's mind about the business. So what were you learning about entrepreneurship? Because so many of it was, when I look at the world today, the world that I grew up in, the world 10 years older than you, and the world, still the world you grew up in, was very prescriptive. You know, you do the right things, become a junior manager and work your way up and do that, and then you retire with fat grandchildren, you know, in the golden years. And it doesn't work that way. What it is that each one of us is an entrepreneur. We're solopreneur, and we find ourselves as free agents and find ourselves working with companies, and then others move. And so in this solopreneur type of activities, what were you learning about the world of entrepreneurship and solopreneurship?
The first thing that I started to realize is the buck stops here. You know, I've got to perform, and if I'm not aligned with what I'm doing, if I'm not totally aligned with it and totally committed, then I falter.
Yeah.
And then learning, you know, who do you trust? And that was a big one for me, learning to judge character, learning to, you know, really sense the people that you were engaging with. And I have to say I was somewhat naive in that area. And,
sure. It's a muscle, right? I mean, it's a skill to build. We actually can build that as a skill, like intuition. Mm-hmm. The only way I build intuition is by going down a number of wrong alleys until I learn to trust it. It's a developmental issue for me.
Well, and one of the growth things for me was I would say, oh, I failed at that. Oh, I failed at that. Oh, I failed at that.
Yep.
But now looking back on it, I say, oh, I learned this there. I learned this there. I learned this there. So in the long view, it's, you know, it's pushing the edge and being willing to take the risk and fall down and then having the heart to get back up and take what you've learned and move on to the next thing. And of course, in the middle of, you know, in the midst of it, when things are going down and it doesn't work out, it sure feels like failure. It's hard to take
a big
picture look and say, oh, well, you know, I've learned stuff. Big picture, I'll be okay. Check no.
Yeah. No.
But in retrospect, I was okay. And I did go on to the next thing and the next thing. And I'm here where I am today as a result of the successes the areas where I, at the time, considered it failure, but it was really a learning experience.
Two of the things that I'm listening to as I'm listening to Brené Brown in her latest book well, I don't even remember the name of it, but anyway, it doesn't matter. It's one of Brené Brown's, and it's one of her latest. But she talks about really the work of shitty first drafts, being willing to have that shitty first draft as the opportunity that and another one, Elizabeth Gilbert told me when I met her one time and we had a chance to chat, and she talked about done is better than good.
Mm-hmm.
And really being able to get that first draft, that shitty first draft, and to say, okay, well, all right, with that experience, that was a shitty first draft, and all right, let's go with that. And the other part is embracing the suck. Being able to just sit there. She said she learned that from Marines and from, you know, that you sit there and you just, you know, when it's hard, you just get a chance to sit down and embrace the suck. and say, okay, it is, this is, it is, it hurts like hell, and it is, and I'm going to embrace it, and I know it is going to pass, and I'm going to go through that.
If I fall back and wallow in that, I'm nowhere. But if I recognize that this is a growing edge, and this is what being in a growing edge feels like, it brings me back.
Thank you.
Back the next day. Yeah.
Well, that brings me to the idea of that life is a team sport, not an individual. It's a team sport. And the minute I start trying to act as an individual, everything tends to me to fall apart because I don't have my team there to pick me up when I lose perspective. I completely lose perspective. I am gone. I am down the freaking rabbit hole. And here's Clay going, my hand, boy, brother, right here, reaching down. And here he's pulling me right back up again because it's a team sport.
You know, I knew that, and within organizations that came through, I don't know that I ever used as much the word team because it kind of, I don't know, but that's what we became. I'd say we became a family, but at the same time,
exactly,
there was an undercurrent. There was an undercurrent of mistrust, and that was one of the things that I started the men's circle about, because I recognized coming out of that environment and so forth, I really didn't trust other men. I really didn't have deep relationship with another man. And we've got to connect on a deeper level. How do you do that? How do I learn to get from head to heart and then go from heart to mouth and speak from the heart with another man?
Yeah.
And I was successful, but when you get right down to the essence of it, that was an area that I recognized I was fell short in, and starting out the men's circle was what that was all about.
God, that's so exciting, isn't that? And to know that we can leave ourselves vulnerable, because when you think about vulnerability, it's opening and putting down my shield when someone else appears to have a weapon. And putting down Miss shield and going, I trust you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Once I felt that, once I could bridge that gap and recognize, oh, that guy is in fear. It looks like anger, but it's really fear. And listen deeply, more deeply, and say, oh, we have a common base here. We're both afraid. Let's acknowledge that to one another, and let's build on that and grow. It's a whole different mindset from my idea versus your idea.
Wow. And it's applicable in business. It's applicable in politics. It's applicable in family situations. It's applicable in entrepreneurship. It's applicable across the board.
Yeah, the old saying, seek to understand and then be understood goes a long way.
Isn't it lovely that idea that nothing is new under the sun, that we can always know that, because this is where I feel about life, and I feel about so much of it is circular, is that we rebring this back. We are reminding. We're re-brought back to mind, remind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about this, the part of what we're doing in the new Compassionate Male and what we're learning is that we're bringing back, we're resurrecting what is true.
Yeah.
And has always been true.
Yeah. Well, and the richness that begins to develop once men come together in an environment that's non-judgmental, that nobody's trying to fix anybody, that we're there practicing and learning how to connect and knowing that it's not going to be perfect and knowing that nobody's going to call you out for it. Come in there with the right intention. And
It looks like we have more to talk about, Clay. It looks like we haven't run out of subjects yet.
Nope.
How about
not yet.
That? All right, dearest. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity to be able to talk with you. And everybody, come back again and we'll talk some more. Bye, Clay.
Bye, Dennis. Thank you.